All right, Shabbos, we'll say good morning. Good morning. Welcome to another incredible week of Daf Yomi together. Yashkoach to Rabbi Yehuda Neuberger for giving the shiur last night. Today's Daf is Kuf Chof Aleph 121. And we are going to pick up on 121 Kuf Chof Aleph at the Mishnah. I want to begin by thanking our sponsors for this week's shiurim. A number of wonderful sponsors. A Week of Learning sponsor. Steve Zinn and Terry Kanzin, in memory of Steve's mother, Doris Devora Bas Yisrael, and with Hakaras Hatov to the entire Kehila for the outpouring of support shown to our family during our time of need. By a Week of Learning dedicated by Aaron and Alana Weinberg, with gratitude to Hashem for Yonatan Shai Weinberg's complete refuah 9 years ago. Dr. Gabriel and Florence Garel, in commemoration of the yard site of Florence's mother, Esther Schwimmer, Esther Bas Avi Ezri Zelig Zichron Livracha, and by the Gayson family, in memory of Dr. Alan Gayson, Eliyahu Ben Mordechai Mendel HaKohen, in commemoration of his first yard site. We thank all of our members for their incredible generosity, their commitment to sponsoring and supporting Torah. And Rabosei, with that, let us begin. So today's daf is Kuf Chof Aleph 121, and we are picking up in Meretz Hashem at the Mishnah. So writes the Mishnah, Nachri Sheba Lechabos. If a Gentile comes to extinguish a fire, suppose in the context, there is a fire. There is a fire that is raging in the house of a Jew, and a Gentile shows up to extinguish the fire. So what is the halacha? Ein omrim lo kave, v'al techabe. I can't instruct him to extinguish it, but I also don't have to tell him not to extinguish it. So what's the fascinating case? So the Nachri goes ahead and shows up at my home. Again, apparently in this particular situation, I didn't ask him, I didn't instruct him, he just sees the fire, he shows up, and so the Mishnah says, Halacha lemaisa, I can't instruct him to go ahead and put it out. Why not? So remember again, take a look at the Mishnah. The Mishnah says it's the first of the intermediate wide lines in Rashi. In Omrim lo kaveh, Rabbanon gazer ala amira lenachri mishum shavos. Supposedly very important. The halacha is, obviously a Gentile is not obligated to keep Shabbos. Now, interestingly enough, not only is a Gentile not permitted to keep Shabbos, but he's actually not allowed to keep Shabbos. It's a different discussion. But lemaisa, again, so on a biblical level, there is no problem with me instructing a non-Jew to perform halacha. They're on a biblical level, even without hinting nothing, straight out, I can instruct a Gentile to perform halacha on Shabbos. The Rabbanon, the rabbis came along and actually restricted this process alt shavus. Shavus shavus, it means a category of things that Chazal legislated in order to maintain a sanctity, I'll call it an atmosphere of serenity, of rest for Shabbos. Shavus said, on a biblical level, technically speaking, you could have a lot of things going on Shabbos, and as long as you are not yourself doing it, it's not a problem. So on a biblical level, I can instruct my Gentile friend to run my business, to do this, to do that, to do a whole bunch of things, and technically I'm living within the letter of the law. Therefore, the rabbis came along and said, no, you cannot instruct a Nachri, a Gentile, to do malacha for you on Shabbos because of Shabbos. So just as an aside, you know, when the use of timers, Shabbos clocks, first became more popular, the Moshe Feinstein Zecher Tzadik Livracha was very much against the use of timers for anything other than like lights. And his logic behind that was that people could easily abuse timers in order to go ahead and just simply have things occur on Shabbos. There was a general concern. Let's just give you a very simple example. Is there anything wrong with setting your television on a timer for Shabbos? Of course. Don't give me those puzzled looks. Right? Of course, this, on a technical level, one can make the argument that, I don't know, maybe there's not any. But again, you understand how, although I'm not doing any kind of malacha, obviously, again, something like that will fundamentally detract from the sanctity of Shabbos. So therefore, again, the Mishnah says, Nachri shows up to put out the fire in my house on Shabbos. I can't instruct him to do it, but I also don't have to tell him not to do it. In other words, if he's coming of his own volition and doing it himself, halacha l'maisa, I don't have to tell him to stop. It may change if you saw something, because we'll say at the end of the day, I don't have an obligation to make sure that the Nachri rests on Shabbos. So if he wants to put out the fire, geig isn't the hate. I can't go ahead and instruct him to do so, for that would be a violation of Amira L'Nachri, instructing a Gentile to do Malacha. But if he does it on his own, it's totally fine. Aval Katan, Sheba L'Chabas. Let's listen to this. Let's say there's a Katan, there's a Jewish child who comes to go ahead and extinguish the fire. In Shonun Bo. Even if he's doing it of his own volition, we do not allow him to do so. Mivnei Sheshvisasso Aleihim. Because Rabbi Sayyin, for a child, Aloch HaMamayis is obligated, his obligation to observe Shabbos is upon his parents. See, interestingly enough, if the Nachri shows up of his own volition and wants to put out the fire, fine, I can't instruct him to do so, but I don't have to stop him from doing it because I have no achrayis, I have no responsibility for the Nachri. On the flip side, if a child wants to go ahead and extinguish the fire, there I do have an achrayis, I do have an obligation, and I am not permitted to let him do so. Says the Gemara, I'm Rabbi Ami. Bidleike tiru lomar kol mechabe ino mafsid. Both are very interesting. Rabbi Ami said, taking this a step further, where there is a fire that breaks out, so I am permitted to make an announcement. Whoever puts out this fire will not lose. Which Shabosa is another way of saying, obviously I'm talking to a Gentile population, and the announcement I'm making is, whoever helps to put out this fire, I'm going to make it worth your while. Not on Shabbos, of course, but after Shabbos. So literally translated, whoever puts out this fire will not lose out. So the Gemara says, in my name is Eli, Shabosa, your rest that seems to support this, Nachri Sheba Lechabos, that if a Gentile comes to go ahead and extinguish the fire, Ein omen lo kabe, ve'al techabe, we don't tell him to put it out or not to put it out. Mipnei she'ein shevisasu aleihem. So it's very interesting. So therefore, I can't tell the Nachri to put it out, but I also don't have to tell him not to put it out. If he's doing it already, if he's doing it for himself, or he's doing it on his own, I shouldn't say for himself yet, he's doing it on his own, halacha l'maisa, I don't have to stop him. The Gemara says, Kavehu delo amin alei. I can't tell him to extinguish it. Ha kol amechabe ino mafsid amin alei. But I will say what I can do is I can make an announcement. Whoever extinguishes this fire will not lose out. Ultimately, I will say, what's the logic of this? Obviously, if I make that announcement, so of course, what am I doing? I'm incentivizing the Nachri to go ahead and put out the fire. So it's interesting. Am I asking the Gentiles straight out to put out the fire? No. I'm not telling them, please put out the fire. But what I'm doing is I'm incentivizing. If you put out the fire, you won't lose. I'll make it worth your while. So why is that permitted? So if you look at Rashi, Rashi says something over here, which is quite amazing. Rashi says, Hakom mechaba eno mafsid, v'nochri midayte didei avid sharia. But say this is very interesting. Halacha l'maisa, when is Amira l'Nachri? When is having a Gentile do malacha for you? When is it problematic? It's problematic when it's clear that the non-Jew is doing it for the Jew. However, if the non-Jew has his own motivations to do something for the Jew, but it has nothing to do really for the Jew, it has to do for the self-serving desires of the Nachri, then halacha l'maisa, that's permitted on Shabbos. So we'll say, where does this come up? Watch this. So if there's a fire going ahead and burning in my house, and I say, whoever goes ahead and puts out this fire will not lose, which is another way of saying, whoever does this, I'll take good care of them after Shabbos. So I say, when the Nachri comes to run to put out the fire, it's not the pshat that there's a spark of Avas Yisrael that's kindled inside of his heart. It says, the Jews, the Jewish people, the Aman Nifchar, if I have an opportunity to help a Jew, to help it, how wonderful, Matovu Manoim, I'm fulfilling the Ratzon Hashem, the Tachlis Habriya. No. There's $100 waiting for me after Shabbos. Right? That's what this is about. I mean, human beings in general are utilitarian beings. Right? What's in it for me? So interestingly enough, when I make that announcement, whoever helps me with the fire will not lose. When the Nachri does the halacha doesn't view it as him doing it for me. The halacha does it as what? Views it as what? As the Nachri doing it for himself. So this is really quite a fascinating halacha. See, even though, again, of course, I am inviting, so to speak, I'm creating the opportunity, but in halacha, the Nachri is doing this for himself. He wants to gain. When is Amira l'Nachri Aser? When it's clear that his motivations are to benefit me. So if the Gentiles' intentions are to benefit me, then it's Aser. But if the Gentiles benefit, if the Gentile's intention is to benefit himself, and I happen to be the beneficiary of his actions, ultimately, again, that will be permitted. So the Gemara says, look at the end of that braisa. So we don't have to say to the Nachri, don't put out the fire. The Gemara says, but yet, again, from the safe of that price, I could say that ultimately you also can make an announcement that halacha lamais, whoever puts it out, will not lose. Right, from that price, nothing conclusive comes out of that price. So we'll say, what we have over here is as follows. We have the statement of the Mishnah. And the Mishnah teaches us that halacha lamais, if a fire breaks out of my house, I cannot explicitly ask a Gentile to put out the fire. That's Amir the Nachri. But what I can do is, if the Nachri shows up of his own volition and wants to put it out, I don't have to stop it. Rabbi Ami coming along and saying there's even more. You can make an announcement. And what's the announcement? Whoever goes ahead and puts out the fire will not lose. Will not lose. Aye, what's the logic? The logic is because when the Nachri shows up to put out the fire, Nachri adaite dinafshe of it. That's Rashi's lashon. The Nachri is doing this for himself. He's not doing this for the Jew, therefore it's mutar. Turn Rabbanon. Maisa, the nafla deleika bechasir shiose ben simoy b'sichin. So let's listen to this. There was a story, and a fire broke out in the chatzor, in the courtyard of Yosef ben Simoy, in the town of Sichin. Uba anshe gistura shal tzipori lechabos. So we'll say, so what happened? The fire department, right? The fire department of Tzipori, the Gentile fire department, came to put out the fire. I will say, just to be clear, so remember, Yosef ben Simoy did not call them. He did not call them. They just showed up to put out the fire. What a fire department. Mamish, what a fire department. They show up even without being called. Well, Mitesha Petropos Shomelachaya. That's because Yosef ben Simoy was the king's treasurer, right? There's always a Jew who's the treasurer, right? So what happened? So ultimately, again, so Yosef ben Simoy was the treasurer of the king. So he was chashiv. So when word got out that a fire started in his house, the fire department just quickly came. And again, he never called them, never asked. So what happens? Velohi nichon mipnei kavra Shabbos. So Yosef ben Simoy did not allow the fire department to put out the fire. Interesting. Didn't allow the fire department to put out the fire. Why? It's covered Shabbos. And a miracle occurred. V'yardu gishamim v'kibu. And a miracle occurred, and it rained, and the rain extinguished the fire. Le'erev, on Matzei Shabbos, shigar l'chol echa mehen shtei siloim. So Yosef ben Simoy sent each of the firefighters to siloim. U'la'farachu shabban chamishim. And ultimately, again, to the fire, to the battalion commander, to the fire commander, he sent 50 siloim. U'kishashamu chachamim b'davar, when the chachamim heard what Yosef ben Simoy said, Anru, lo haya tzarech lekach. Yosef ben Simoy did not need to do this. Why not? Shari shaninu, nochi shabbat lechabos, in omrim lo kaveh, va'al techabe. Because it will say, we learned in the Mishnah that what? That if a fire breaks out in the Jew's home, as much as the Jew can't go ahead and extinguish it himself or explicitly instruct the Nachri to do so, if the Nachri shows up of his own volition and puts it out, the Jew need not tell him to stop. So we'll say, so Yosef ben Simoy, very nice that he got a miracle, but Lamaisa said that Rabbana said he didn't have to do what he did. He could have allowed them to put out the fire since indeed they came of their own volition. We'll say not only that, but Bepashas, even in this case, remember, again, since he is the treasurer of the king, what they were doing ultimately, again, was a service to the king as well. So one can make the argument that this wasn't even for Yosef ben Simoy, but nevertheless, Yosef ben Simoy did not allow them to go out and put out the fire. Now, I'll show you something interesting. The Marsha comments on this, and the Marsha writes over here as follows. He says, so why didn't Yosef ben Simoy, why didn't he let them go ahead and put... So the Mishnah says, the Gemara says, Nipnei Kavod Shabbos. But what does that mean? That's not the halacha. So listen to this. So the Marsha writes, Lo Amar Mishum Iser Shabbos, Efshar Du Gam Yodah Deleka Iser Kedemasik, Bein Shalom Tchaba, El Mishum Kavod Shabbos Ba'alma Hichmir Al Atzmo, U'kadei Shelo Yichashduhu Shu Amar Lekavei. So the Marsha says that for whatever the reason, Yosef ben Simoy felt that people might not understand, and that they might think, people who saw this might think, that he explicitly instructed the firefighters to come and to put out the fire. That was his concern, that people seen this. That's why it says Mishum Kavod Shabbos, right? We'll say it's not the pshat that he knew that it was absolutely permitted to allow the firefighters to put out the fire on Shabbos. After all, again, remember, he didn't ask them, he didn't instruct them, they came of their own volition, and they're working for themselves. But because of Kavod Shabbos, apparently for whatever the reason, Yosef Ben Simoy was afraid that people might not realize the circumstances, and they might assume that he explicitly asked the firefighters to put out the fire, and therefore, again, He simply said no thank you, and Baruch Hashem was saved by a miracle. So remember again, the Gemara said that halacha lemaisa, all of this is with an achri, but if a child, right, a katan, a Jewish child, begins to put out the fire, we have to tell him to stop. Shamas mina, what do you see from here? Katan ochal nevelus, deizin mitzuvan alav lahafisha. What you see from here is something very important. That even though a child is not obligated to keep halacha, but if we see a child doing something wrong, so for example, let's say you see a child eating nevelus, you see a child eating something not kosher, literally it means Beis Din is obligated to intervene. Now, by the way, Beis Din doesn't just mean Beis Din. Beis Din also means the parents. That you see a busay, because on one end you can say, look, the kid, it doesn't have an obligation, right? Before Bar Bas Mitzvah, or even before the age of Chinuch, so a child doesn't have any halachic obligations. So let them do whatever they want. So you see from the Rabbah say, that's what? That Allah l'maisa, that parents, Beis Din, are obligated to prevent a child from performing an Isser. Because look at this case. The fire breaks out in the house. The kid, on his own accord, wants to go and put out the fire. What does the Mishnah say? You can't let him do so. To which he wants to be Yochanan. Bekatana osla das aviv. No. What's the case over here? The case in the Mishnah Avosa is where a katan, the child, is acting on the volition of his father, or acting on the cue of his father. What does it mean? Look at Rashi, second wide line in Rashi. Rashi says, al das aviv. Rashi says, bekatan sheyada lahafkin shakivu izen noach li aviv va'oseh bishvilo. So I want to say, what's the case in the Mishnah? Where the katan, although he is a katan, is astute enough to know that his father wants him to put out the fire. He sees how, he sees how distressed his father is about the fire. So the katan understands that his father would love for someone to go out and put out the fire. So of course the father is not instructing the katan to go ahead and do anything, but lemaisa, the katan understands contextually that his father is distressed by the fire, and therefore when he puts out the fire, when he goes to put out the fire, so to speak, is acting based on the cue of his father. That's the problematic case. We would assume, remember, the Mishnah quotes two cases. One of a katan, one of a nachri. Right? So the nachri, as long as he's not explicitly asked by the Jew to put out the fire, it's okay. Yet the katan, even if he's not explicitly asked to put out the fire, if he does so, it's usur. Why? Because we assume that when the katan is acting, the katan knows that his father wants the fire put out. Therefore, again, it's considered as if he's acting on behalf of his father. But one second. The nachri also knows that the Jew wants the fire put out in his house. So why don't we view it as if the nachri is also acting on behalf of the Jew? To which the Masabos says a very profound statement. Nachri ledaite denafshe ovid. Ultimately, and above, because we assume that when a Gentile acts, a Gentile ultimately, again, is acting for his own interests. What does this mean? Look at Rashi. Nachri adaite dinaf she'avit. Vafidu yodeh shenoach lo li Yisrael hu la'anas atzmo miskavin sheyodeh shelo yafzit. See, Rabbi Osai, this is really quite fascinating. At the end of the day, you know, in Chazal's logic, we assume that when people do things, very rarely do you find a purely altruistic act, right? Tabo said, this is why we say even in halacha, right? Even what's the only chesed shel emes? The only chesed shel emes is the chesed you do for the dead, right? Why is that? Because there's no possibility of repayment, which tells you that Chazal understood that in general, even in chesed, you never really have a purely altruistic act, because when I do something nice for someone, there's always something that could come from that, and maybe even have an expectation. So amazing enough, the Gemara says like this, When the Nachri goes ahead and shows up, right, he sees the Jew's house on fire. The Jew did not ask him to put it out. The Nachri comes, he puts out his own volition. So you say, isn't he acting on behalf of the Jew? He sees the Jew is sitting there distressed, crying, mamish, upset. To which the one says, no. The Nachri, when he extinguishes without being asked, he's not doing it to benefit the Jew. He's doing it to benefit himself. He recognizes that if he does this, there may very well be some type of real payout for this. Therefore, again, as long as the Nachri is not instructed by the Jew, even though it's clear that the Jew is happy and wants the Nachri to do this, and the Nachri knows that the Jew is happy and wants him to do it, we view it as if the Nachri is acting based on his own self-interest and not the interest of the Jew. I just want to point out, this is not like a Jew-non-Jew distinction. Right? This is just a human being distinction. That when people do things ultimately, again, to benefit themselves. So what comes out of this sugya is something very interesting. Number one, you can't explicitly instruct a Nachri to put out the fire on Shabbos, because that's Amira the Nachri. And even though instructing a Gentile to do something if you're on Shabbos is biblically permitted, the rabbi stepped in and said, you can't do it because of Shavuos. We want to maintain an atmosphere of serenity, of rest. You can't instruct non-Jews to do malacha. However, if the non-Jew shows up on his own volition and puts out the fire, you do not have to tell him to stop. But it's clear that he's acting on my behalf. I didn't ask him to do it. And like the Gemara just said, halacha lamaisa, we assume that when the Nachri puts it out for his own self-interest, because he knows most probably the Jew is going to pay him, or the Jew is going to do him a favor, or the Jew is going to have incredible gratitude towards him. But there's a benefit for him. Rabbi Ami comes along and says, not only that, but you can make an announcement that says, whoever puts out the fire will not lose out. Which also says another way of saying, whoever puts out the fire is going to get a nice matana. And I'm not talking about, two times chai. You know, this is going to be something significant for the Nachri who does it. Rabbi Ami says such a statement will be permitted as well. Both say, so what's the halacha? So obviously, as you already know, these halachas are going to change based on the way we build our houses as well. But listen to this. Listen to this halacha. So this is Sif Chaf Hei. Shulchan Aruch writes as follows. Eino Yehudi, this is in Simon Shin Lamed Dalet, Sif Chaf Hei, Sifim Chaf Hei and Chaf Vav. Eino Yehudi Sheba Lechabos, In Tzarech Limchos Biyado. If a non-Jew shows up to put out your fire, you do not have to go ahead and object to him doing so. Aval Katan Sheba Lechabos, but if a Jewish child comes to extinguish the fire, Tzarech Limchos Biyado. There, ultimately, again, you must go ahead and object. Now, the Mishnah Berurah says, why is it you don't have to object when the non-Jew comes along? Tenehudi adaita dinaf shekavid. Vafili odesh nochlo Yisrael, hula nos atzom is kavin, shiodesh lo yafsid. Rabbi said, this is incredible. So again, this is like the underpinning of Amir al-Nachri. When the non-Jew is not asked for something, right? Not asked by a Jew, but he does it. Even though it's clear that he's doing it for the benefit of the Jew. I mean, Rabbi said, the Nachri is walking by, he sees the Jew's house on fire. The Nachri lives 5 miles away. Nothing to do with the Nachri. He puts out the fire. Isn't it clear that he's doing it for the Jew? Yes, it is clear that he's doing it for the Jew. But the Jew is not his motivation. What's his motivation? That he knows there'll be some kind of compensation or something positive will come out of this for him. Therefore, again, we view it as if he's acting on his own. Now we view it. He is acting on his own volition. And therefore, again, the Jew need not tell him to stop. Sif Chavav, Yocholomar Bifnei Eino Yehudi, Kala Mechabe Eino Mafsid. So I will say furthermore, again, you can make announcements in front of a non-Jew. Whoever puts out the fire will not lose. Af im eno mezuman kan yochol likrosa sheyavo, af al pi shevada yichabe kishiyavo. So listen to this. And even if there's no non-Jew present, you can go and find a non-Jew and invite him to the scene of the fire and go ahead and make this statement. V'chol ki yotzei bazeh behezek haba pisom ki go nisra ha'chav ish ha'yayin yochol likro en yehudi af al pi shevadai yisaknenam yavo. So this is actually very interesting. This is another halacha. The other halacha is, there is no problem with proactively and explicitly inviting a Nachri to the scene of the damage. In other words, so this is not even in a fire, the Shulchan Aruch says, even in the case of a broken barrel of wine, you can invite the Nachri to come to your home, and then he's going to see the broken barrel of wine, and he's going to fix it. So again, essentially, I can't explicitly tell the Nachri to go ahead and put out the fire. What I can do is, if he comes out of his own volition, I'll have to tell him to stop. And not only that, I can make an announcement. Whoever helps out here will not lose. Now, it's interesting. The Rama, we're not going to do this whole thing, but the Rama says, V'chaladinim haniskar b'dini hadlaka, hani mili b'yemehem. So what says, so the Rama points out, by all of these halachas with fires, that was in the times of the Gemara. Aval bizman shanu shruin bein imam yehudim, kasu harishonim v'achronim zal, shemutur lechabos deleika b'shabis mishum diyesh ba sakhanas nefashas. Vazoriz harezeh mishubach. So what says, so the Mishnah, so the Rama says today that we live amongst Gentiles, right, which also means that we live in much more compacted areas. Right? See, both say, this idea of the fire, see, to us this sounds like crazy, that you have a fire in your house and you're not going to put it out. So remember, it sounds crazy to us because we have electricity, we have gas lines, we have neighbors. I mean, I shouldn't say in that order. We have neighbors, we have electricity, we have gas lines. Right? So to us, the notion of having a fire rage in your house and just save, you know, muzzin gimel su'udos or some articles of clothing sounds crazy. But if you could imagine a house in times of the Gemara, in the middle of nowhere, no neighbors, no gas lines, no electricity. Okay, so then you're looking at a purely financial loss. The Rama says that today, I remember again, the Rama is really writing in the 1600s in Krakow. And if you've ever been to Krakow, you could see, or you could see a lot of how they lived even back then as well. People were living very close, right? Krakow is a city. People were living very close to each other. Fire breaks out in Reuven's home. It doesn't just impact Reuven, it impacts everyone. So Lamais again, the Rama says, all these halachas by fires were back then. But today, if a fire breaks out, halacha Lamais, you put it out, right? You don't wait for a nachri, you don't think around, you don't say, call it. Whoever helps out won't lose. You, the Jew, put it out yourself. Good. Bose says the Mishnah, Kofin ka'ara gabi haner b'shoshlo tochaz b'kor. What's an interesting case? I have a candle or a fire, and I see that what happens, the fire is, the flame is flickering in a way that it could catch, it could ignite the beam that is above it. So what could I do on Shabbos? I could take a bowl and put it over the fire. Now Rashi points out, you can't do it in a way that halacha lemaisa will deprive the ner of oxygen, thereby automatically going in and extinguishing the ner. But what you can do is just kind of put a utensil over the fire to prevent it from catching on the beam above. Rashi says, "Ovia gabi aner, ubivach lo yichada." You can't extinguish the ner. Vafa pishin otakli vatzas korah. So fine. So it says the Mishnah. That's number one. Bishul shelo tochas b'korah. Vatzas shal katan. Furthermore, again, you could also go ahead. You could also go ahead and place an inverted utensil on top of the excrement of a child. Again, we'll define the parameters of this. Va'al akrav shalotishach. And you could also go ahead and put a utensil over a scorpion in order that it should not bite. So then we're Rabbi Yehuda. So we'll say, so just to understand the tzoa case, right? We'll have to see exactly what that is. The akrav case is what's happening over here. Remember, the act of putting a bowl over a scorpion is tzeda, is trapping. So the Mishnah is telling me that I'm permitted to go ahead and put a bowl over the scorpion in order, even though in effect I'm trapping the scorpion, in order that it not bite. The Gemara says, "Ma'aseh ba'alafin Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai." There was one story that came from Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Ba'ariv, so we'll say Arav was a town. Va'amar choshesheni lo mechadesh. Rabbi Yochanan said, "I think that the guy who put the bowl on top of the scorpion may be chayiv echatos." Rashi says over here, "Choshesheni lo." Kevon, the last line in Rashi, "Kevon the law haya akrav ratz acharav." So it's a case that came from Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. And the case was of a guy who put a bowl over the scorpion. The issue is that the scorpion was not running after the guy. So the scorpion was minding its own business, and this guy put a bowl on top of the scorpion. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai sees this, and he says, you know, I'm not sure that what he did was correct. And therefore, again, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says, I think that might have been an act of seder of trapping, and he may be chayiv v'chatos. Okay, so we'll see the parameters in the rest. This is the Gemara. Amar Rabbi Yehuda. So listen, I'm sorry. Listen, it's actually a fascinating story. Rabbi Yehuda v'Rav Yirmiyah bar Abba v'Rav Hanan bar Rava iklu lebei Rav Avin demin Neshika. or in the Shikia. So what happened? So these rabbis, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yirmiyah, and Rabbi Hanan, went to the house of Ovin. Now watch this. Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yirmiyah bar Abba, Aisu on the base. Aisu le Puriyah. So Ovin brought out couches. He brought out couches for Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yirmiyah. But Rav Hanan bar Rava lo Aisule. But he did not bring out a couch. Ovin did not bring out a couch for Rav Hanan bar Rava. Why not? Apparently, Ovin did not think that Rav Hanan was such a Talmud Chacham. He didn't think that it was a Talmud Chacham. And he said, you could just sit on the ground. So we'll say, this is actually a very dramatic story. Right? So Ovin is going ahead. We'll say, incredible, right? So Ovin brings out couches ultimately again for Rav Yehuda and Rav Yirmiyah. Doesn't bring out a couch ultimately again for Rav Hanan. Thinking Rav Hanan is not such a great Talmud Chacham, let him sit on the ground. But I just want to point out, you know, Ovin's intention was not to slight Rav Hanan. This, again, remember, there was a different level of kavod that was accorded to a Talmud Chacham than that which was accorded to a non-Talmud Chacham. So Talmidei Chachamim get the couches, and the guy was just a regular guy. He could sit on the ground. So what happens? Ashkichei Masni Lebrei. So Rav Hanan, who was sitting on the ground, overheard Ovin teaching the following to his son. You could place a utensil over on top of the excrement of a child in order to prevent the child from touching the excrement. Amar Lei, so Rav Hanan heard this and he said, Ovin Shatya Masni Shtusa Libnei. Ovin the fool teaches foolish Mishnayos to his son. Which is another way, so obviously Rav Hanan was a bit offended over the fact that he did not get a couch, and that he was looked down upon by Ovin as being a non-Talmud Chacham. So when he hears Ovin teaching his son, Rav Hanan says, you know, you think you know who's a Talmud Chacham, who's not a Talmud Chacham? You're a fool, and you're teaching your child foolish Torah. Why? Valohi atzma muchenes leklavim. Remember again, the tzoa, the excrement of children, was often eaten by dogs. I'll take the Gemara's word for it. Right, so we'll say, oh, this must be something different kinds of excrement. So dogs apparently would often eat the excrement of children. Maybe you'll say, well, the excrement was not prepared from before Shabbos, and therefore maybe it's Mokso. Vatanya, we learned. So we'll see actually very interesting halacha, that in general, if you were to draw water from a river or from a spring on Shabbos, we'll say the water that you're taking on Shabbos was not there on Erev Shabbos, right? Because let's say, for example, a river flows, even a spring flows. So the water that you're taking on Shabbos wasn't necessarily there on Erev Shabbos, but we assume that what? Harihin keragle kolonim. They are like the feet of the person who draws them, which was another way of saying that halacha is a person has in mind that if they're going to go ahead and draw water on Shabbos, that the water that's there is the water that's muchan. Therefore, again, I'm also the same way it is normal for children to excrete. And therefore, again, it's understandable that their excrement will be usable by dogs on Shabbos. Ve'elo heichi isnie. So Ravin said to Rav Hanan, so nu, how should I teach the Mishnah? Ema v'altsoa shel tarnegolim mipnei katan. But the Mishnah says like this. If you have excrement from a chicken, halacha lamaisa, you are permitted to go ahead and place a bowl over that, the utensil over that, in order to keep children from playing with the excrement. I will say the goal is a very simple one. Keep your kid from playing with excrement. So therefore what? If the chicken excretes, so on Shabbos, I'm permitted to take a bowl, put it over the excrement in order that the child should not play with the excrement. I have a sefer kli d'avei graf shalrai, but I understand. The excrement, Rabbi says, you should be able to move that lechatchila. Why? Rabbi says, remember again, we learned about this graf shalrei. Graf shalrei literally means a bedpan. Rabbi says, if you take a look at Rashi's moment, Tzor shal tana golem, Rashi says, the lechazi leklavim, v'shal katan diktani masnitsin shemetapeach ba katan kamar, u'bishvila katan omer kofen. So we're assuming now maybe that the Mishnah means is that if you see chicken excrement, right, you want to put a kli over that in order that the child not come to go ahead and play with that. Aye, but isn't that like graf shalai? So what's the halacha? Graf shalai means, let's say you have a bedpan in your house on Shabbos. So the Gemara says that you are, now you would think to yourself, a bedpan should be mukta, which makes sense, right? There's nothing in there that's really for use for you on Shabbos. Chazal allowed you to take out a bedpan and empty it out on Shabbos, since there's a recognition that halach lemaisa, the presence of the bedpan in your home over the course of Shabbos will significantly diminish the atmosphere of holiness of Shabbos. So I'll say, just so you understand, this is the, as you mentioned before, this is the very reason that you are permitted to go ahead and take out your garbage on Shabbos. Right? Why are you allowed to take out garbage on Shabbos? Garbage is mukta. So it's sitting in my kitchen, I should go out to Shabbos. Because most people don't want bags of garbage in their kitchen over Shabbos. It diminishes the sanctity and the holiness and the aura of Shabbos to have garbage laying around. That's garbage. So I don't think it's actually able to clean up the chicken excrement. Just, I don't want to have to put a utensil over it. Just clean it up. To which words, v'chik deim agrav sharei agav mona in ihu gufeilo. Maybe no. Maybe Rabbi will say the grav sharei literally means the bedpan. Maybe the reason you can move the bedpan is because you're not handling the waste directly. Instead, you're moving a utensil in which the waste is housed. I v'ha ha'hu achbar v'yishtachach b'ispar mikid Rav Ashi, but yet there was the case of the dead mouse that was found in the spices of Rav Ashi. V'amar luhu, and he said to his attendants, nekutu b'tzutzisei v'afkua ba'ashpa, go ahead and take the mouse by its tail and throw it out. So we'll say, what do you see from here? The dead mouse was in the spices, and yet what? And ultimately, Rav Ashi allowed the mouse to be handled itself. So you see that the license to remove graf sharei, something disgusting, is not just when it's in a kli, but even the item itself. So here's what's the case ba'ashva. The case of Osai is where the chicken excrement is like a chagad over here, right? The chicken excrement is in the ashva, is in the garbage dump. So what are you allowed to do on Shabbos? You could take a utensil, overturn it over the excrement, the chicken excrement in the ashpa, the garbage dump, in order that the child should not come to play with it. The katan ba'ashpa my boyle. I don't understand. Kids don't normally play in garbage dumps. Right? So we'll say, so therefore again, what do I have to be concerned about the katan? Bechatzer. Now what's the case? The case is where the chicken excrement is in the chatzar, is in the courtyard. So because it's in the courtyard, that's the concern that maybe the child will go ahead and come to play with it. And therefore, Allah Kalamai, so we could put the utensil over the excrement. I chatzanami graf sharei. I understand. If we're back in the chatzar, and the excrement rabbi should have the din of graf sharei, the bedpan. And therefore, Allah Kalamai should be able just to clean it up directly. Ba'ash basha b'chatzar. What's the case? It's the garbage dump in the chatzar. It's the garbage dump in the chatzar. So apparently when you snap it was as follows. They'd have like larger garbage dumps, which were situated somewhere else. But each chatzar had like its own little garbage dump. Its own little garbage dump. So in that ashpa, children would often play. And therefore, Allah Kalamai said, if there's chicken excrement in that ashpa, there was a concern that a child will come to go ahead and play with it. So what does the Mishnah teach me? Halach l'maaseh, could take a utensil, invert it over the excrement in order that the child does not go ahead and play with it. Good. Val akrav shelo tishach. So what's an interesting one? So remember again, the Mishnah said, I could also take a utensil. Now, I just want to point out, in the excrement case, what's unique about this is as follows. That essentially, you're moving a utensil for a non-necessary item, or for a mukta item. So that's the chiddush over here, that I can move the utensil to go ahead and cover the excrement. Even though the excrement itself is mukta on Shabbos, I can move the utensil to cover the excrement to prevent the child from playing in it. Fine. Next piece in the Mishnah was, you could go ahead and trap a scorpion underneath a bowl in order that the scorpion doesn't bite anyone. So mostly now, the stakes over here are much higher. Right? Why? Because the act of going out and putting a bowl on top of the scorpion is mamishwat, the malach of tzedah. This is the malach of trapping. Yet, the Mishnah says that it is permitted. I'm Rabbi Shulman Levi. Listen to this. Kolamazikin neheragin b'shabbos. Most Rabbi Shulman Levi has a very broad statement. And he says that halacha lemaisa, any animal that has the ability to go ahead and hurt someone, right? Kolamazik, can be killed on Shabbos. I will say now, it sounds like what he's saying is, can be proactively killed on Shabbos. Look at Rashi just a moment. Ne'eragin b'Shabbos. V'kasan kadayit chol afilu ein ratzin acharov. Umishum the Svila Kirab Shimon Malacha Shitzuch Alagufa Midrabanin Dasura Bachel Gazu. So what's saying? What it sounds like Rabbi Yeshua is saying is like this: that halacha lemaisa, any animal, right, that has the capacity to harm a human being on Shabbos, even if it's not actively engaged in trying to harm the human being on Shabbos, can be killed on Shabbos. Really quite amazing. So Rashi says the logic by this seems to be that Rabbi Yehoshua Levi will hold like Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon holds that a malacha shenitzvicha legufa, right? A malacha done not for its intended purpose is only aser midirabanan, and the Rabbanon lifted that restriction in cases where there's the potential for harm. So therefore, I will say Rabbi Yehoshua Levi literally says you can go out on Shabbos, look for stuff to kill if it's the type of item that can normally go ahead and harm a person. So even if the animal is not posing a direct threat to you, you could still go ahead and kill it on Shabbos. Master Yossi says, really? Chemish? Yeah, we learned the following. Chemish ne'eragim b'Shabbos. There are five things which can be killed on Shabbos. Ve'eloin, these are the things that can be killed. Zvov Shavaretz Mitzrayim, the Egyptian fly. Sira Shebi Yavna, the Yavna hornet. Akrov Shel Chadyab, the Chadyab scorpion. Nacha Shavaretz Yisrael, and the Eretz Yisrael snake. The Kelev Shote B'chol Makum, and a crazy dog, in any place. Okay, so, you know, we don't have to. You know my feelings about the dog. So we'll leave that for you could reference back. What's a crazy dog? Well, it's important to know any dog has the ability to become a chassid shote, not a chassid shote, a kelev shote. Sorry. And it's supposed to say, so ultimately, everybody thinks their dog is cute. The dog is cute until it's not, right? And the dog is well behaved until it's not. Important to remember, it's an animal. It's not a family member. It's not a human being. It's an animal. And therefore, again, those animal instincts are always there. It might look cute to you now, but it is still part of the animal kingdom, even if it lives in your house. Anyway, says the Gemara, Kelev Shote B'chol Makom. So we'll say, Salach Alamaisa, the crazy dog, right? The crazy dog in any place. So the Gemara says, money. So whose opinion is this? Reflect. So we'll say, now here's what's interesting. So obviously, what's happening in this Braisa, in Rabbi Yosef's statement, is apparently there are only certain types of animals that ultimately can be killed on Shabbos, because these are the types of animals that pose a direct threat. So money, whose opinion is this? Ilim Rabbi Huda, if it's Rabbi Huda, Amar Malach Shenetzricha Legufa Chayvala. So remember again, Rabbi Huda would say that really you can't, even I will say, now remember, Halacha Lamaisa, there is an Av Malach of Shchita, of killing something. Now, killing something is only usher when? Only when the intention was to benefit from the animal, right? So remember again, shchita was done because you want the hog, you want the meat. But lemaisa, killing an animal because it poses a threat, or it could pose a threat, is a malacha shina tzvicha legufa. Is a malacha for its non-intended purpose. So says the Gemara, who is the opinion who says the malacha shina tzvicha legufa yachayiv? That's so. If Rabbi Huda would say this is usher, I love Rabbi Shimon. Who? Rather, it must be Rabbi Shimon. Vahani hu deshali. And it's only these five cases where ultimately, again, it's permitted to kill this kind of animal on Shabbos. The Gemara says, achrini lo. But other types of animals will not be forbidden. And I remember, again, the contrast to make it is as follows. Rabbi Shimon Levi seems to have a very expansive statement, right? Rabbi Shimon Levi says, kol hamazikin neharagin b'Shabbos. Anything that could harm someone is killed on Shabbos. Yet again, Rav Yosef comes along and says there are only really five types of animals that can be killed on Shabbos. So which one is it? To which the Gemara says, "Amar Rabbi Yirmiyah, Uman ne'malon dohametaretz tehi, dilma mishabesh tehi." Who says that the statement of Rav Yosef is correct? Maybe it's flawed. Amar Rav Yosef, ana masnina la. So Rabbi Yosef says, no, I know that my statement is authoritative. I've learned it, I've taught it, and I can reconcile the contradiction. Beratzu acharav v'divrei hakol. Rabbi Yosef says, listen to this. It could very well be, look at Rashi. Rashi says over here, v'divrei hakol, I'm sorry, ana taninala, I'm sorry, Adam Itarex Nala, to look tick shiki, Amra Bioshob and Levi, Hakoma, Kalamazik in Eragin, Biratsin Akharov, Kamar, Depikuach Nefeshu. Both say, what's Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi's statement where he says that you could kill anything that poses a danger? That's when the animal is pursuing you. When the animal is pursuing you, then halacha lemaisa, any animal pursuing you is considered to pose a danger, and therefore halacha lemaisa, you would be permitted to go ahead and kill it. And everybody would agree in that case. Look at Rashi, v'divrei akol, afil Rabbi Yehuda v'hadeh chamisha neharagin kishein ratzen achar Rabbi Shimon. So let's listen to this. So here Rabbi Yosef is making the distinction as follows. The halacha is Rabbi Shimon will be saying, any time an animal is pursuing you, and it's clear that the intention of the animal is to harm you, you are permitted to kill it on Shabbos. Okay. Rav Yosef's statement is that there are five types of animals where even if they are not actively pursuing you, you are still permitted to proactively kill them, for they pose a danger. Those are the five animals mentioned over here, right? The Egyptians, Vuv, the hornet of Yavne, the scorpion of Chadyab, and the Nachash of Eretz Yisrael. Those five animals, even if they're not pursuing you, you can proactively kill them because they are considered to pose a risk. So the Gemara says, Tani Tana Kamei Derava. So we'll say second white line. Tani Tana Kamei Derava, Barav Huna, Ha-Horig Nechashav Akravim B'Shabbos in Ruach Hasid Nochei Menu. So let's listen to this. They made a statement that one who kills snakes and scorpions on Shabbos, Ruach Hasidim is not Nochei Menu. Right? The spirit of the pious is not happy with him. Okay? Rashi says over here, second white line in Rashi, Ein ruach chasidim nochem, eno daiton shol chasidim eno meureves imo, she'en hagun b'enei mamash asa. The chasidim are not happy with the fact that he killed the snakes and scorpions. So let's listen to this. Amalei said to him, v'osin chasidim, and those chasidim who are unhappy with him, ein ruach chachamim nochem mehem. Okay, so we'll say, the chasidim who are unhappy with the guy who killed the snakes and the scorpions on Shabbos, the chachamim are unhappy with those chasidim. Which Shabbos says, it seems to be another way of saying that the Chachamim want you to kill snakes and scorpions even on Shabbos, for the assumption is that they pose a risk. And because they pose a risk, therefore halacha lemaisa, they should be killed even on Shabbos. So pliga d'Rafuna. D'Rafuna chazie lahu gavra d'ka katal zibura. So we'll say, because Rafuna saw a guy who once killed a bee on Shabbos, Amarle Shalom Sinhu Lakulu, did you get all of them? So was it which was Rav Huna's way of saying Shkayach, you killed one bee. Did you get all of them? Did you get the whole swarm? Right? Did you get everyone? In other words, what did you really accomplish by killing one bee? There's a million other ones. To which the Gemara says, turn up on them. So we'll say, this is really a really fascinating discussion. So we'll say, so it goes without saying in the case of Ratzu Acharav, in a case where ultimately again the animal is running after you to do harm. Now we'll say, I want to point out over here, Harm doesn't just have to be a case of sakanas nefashas. It's clear that you're allowed to kill an animal that is looking to kill you. That's not a chiddush, right? You could do anything for sakanas nefashas on Shabbos. That's not, we'll say, but even let's say again, it's clear that it's going to bite me and harm me. I'm not going to die, but I'm going to get bitten or I'm going to get harmed. Everyone agrees that in those cases, you could kill the animal that is pursuing you. The interesting machlokes case is, can you proactively kill animals that by definition are harmful? Can you proactively kill a snake or kill a scorpion? The snake right now is minding its own business, and the scorpion is minding its own business. They're not doing anything to me right now. But Lamaisa, can I proactively kill them now? We'll say, if again, I come upon snakes and scorpions on Shabbos, so the Gemara says, Hargan, if you kill them, Biyadua shenizdamnu lo lahargan. So we'll say, if you kill them on Shabbos, know that what was supposed to happen is they were supposed to kill you, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave you the ability to kill them. So this is actually very interesting. Right, Rashi says, shenizdamnu lo lahargan, lekach bol yado, shezimino hamakom laabdon, lefisho asidos lazikon, vigilgulos chus aidei zakas. Listen to this. So if I come across snakes and scorpions on Shabbos and I kill them, so that's a sign from above that they were supposed to kill me, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu allowed me to kill them. Lo hargon, what happens if I did not kill them? Biyadua shenizdamnu lo hargo, v'nasto lo neis min hashamayim. But I will say, if halacha lemaisa, then what? right? There's a snake and scorpion, and let's say again, they ran away. I tried to kill them, but they got away. I didn't get a chance to kill them. That's indicative of the fact that they were supposed to kill me, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu performed the miracle and saved me from the snakes and scorpions. So we'll say, so what do you see from here? It sounds like over here that halacha lamaisa, you are permitted to proactively kill snakes and scorpions on Shabbos. Because right? What's the first case? I'm walking to shul, and there's a snake and scorpion there, and I kill it. Right? So the Gemara says, if you killed it, that's a sign that what? It was supposed to kill you, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu performed the miracle and you killed it instead. So you see, for that I'm permitted to proactively kill harmful animals on Shabbos. No. So what's the case? I mean, obviously, Gemara says, Amr Ula, V'teim Rav Arachanan Rabbi Yochanan B'ni Shufin. What's the case? They're both saying where they were hissing. Snakes hiss. I guess scorpions hiss also, or somehow the scorpion looks like it's poised to attack. So I will say, in that kind of case, where it was poised to attack, everyone agrees that you are permitted to go ahead and kill the snake or the scorpion before it does anything. So Amar Abba Bar Kahana, Pam Achos, listen to this, we'll say, one time, Nafal Echa Beis HaMedrash, one time the snake fell into the Medrash. What it sounds like is like a snake was in the rafters, and fell onto the floor of the Beis HaMedrash. Poisonous snake. Va'amar nivusi echad v'hargo. And a guy, a nivusi was a place. Right? And nivusi echad got up and killed it. Killed the snake. Amar Rabbi, paga bo ki yotze bo. Someone just like the snake killed it. So iboilahu, what does that mean? Paga bo ki yotze bo. The shapir avat olo. So we'll say, so the shayla was, when Rebbe said that, was that a compliment or not? Was Rebbe saying that someone as vicious, as strong as the snake killed the snake, or someone like a snake killed the snake? In other words, was he complimenting the Nevute, the guy who killed it, or not? So Tashma, Rebbe Avabre, Rebbe Chibar Abba, Rebbe Zera, Havu Yasvi Akila Drabyanai. So we'll say ultimately again what happened. Rabbi Abri Drabchia and Rabbi and Rabbi and sorry and I'm sorry. Rabbi Abba Bray Drabchia Bar Abba and Rabbi Zera were sitting on the porch of Rabbi Yanai. What happens? Nafak Milsam Abinaihu. They started talking about halacha and they started dealing with the following case. Can you kill snakes and scorpions on Shabbos? Amar lahu, tsira ani horeg, nachash va'akarav lo kol shekein. He says, I kill hornets, right, or wasps, right? So if I kill those, certainly I'll kill snakes and scorpions as well. I dilma lefitumo. We'll say maybe that's talking about a case. Lefitumo means in the normal course of walking. Or as we'll say, maybe what he's saying is like this. Not that you spend your Shabbos afternoon going and hunting snakes and scorpions, but maybe what it means is like this. If I'm walking, minding my own business, and there happens to be a snake or a scorpion right in front of me, and I have a choice, I could either walk around it, or I could walk on it and kill it. So anyway, what he's saying is, halacha l'maisa, you need not walk around it, you could kill it in the normal course of walking. That's mean the fitumo means the normal course of walking. So the marzimu l'fitumo, dam rav Yehuda, rok darsa l'fitumo. Because for example, let's say there's saliva on the ground. So normally on Shabbos, if it wasn't Shabbos, if you saw saliva on it, what would you do? You would move your foot back and forth on the saliva to kind of mash it into the ground. And we'll say, now there's a problem with doing that on Shabbos. That's what I'm doing on Shabbos. You can't move dirt back and forth because the act of moving dirt back and forth on Shabbos is what? Is halacha lemaisa hashvas gumos, potentially leveling out the ground. And leveling out the ground could be a problem of bona. Well, it depends where you're doing it. If you do that in the house, it's bona. If you do it outside of the house, it may be zri or charisha. Right? So I will say it again. But yet, if there's saliva on the ground, you could just walk on top of it in your normal course of walking, even though it gets pushed into the ground. So it's the same thing over here. You can't go out killing snakes and scorpions, but if the snakes or scorpions are right in front of you in your normal course of walking, you could just walk right on top of it and kill it. Vam Rav Sheshes, nachash darsa lafi tumo. Vam Rav Kitino, akrav darsa lafi tumo. So I will say, because after all, we know that it appears that everyone agrees that halacha lemaisa, if there's a snake or scorpion right in front of you, and just in your normal course of walking, you could step on it and kill it, that is permitted. So I will say, interestingly enough, everyone seems to agree with that. So you don't have to sidestep the snake or the scorpion in order to go ahead and avoid killing them if they don't pose a risk to you. But even if halacha l'maaseh, they don't pose an active risk right now, if you could kill them in your normal course of walking, that is permitted. That is permitted. So I will say, what I don't know is what? So I will say, here's what I know. What I know is that halacha l'maaseh, obviously if the snake or scorpion or any other animal for that matter poses a risk, I could kill it. That I know, halacha l'maaseh. I also know that I could kill a snake or scorpion in my normal course of walking. So even though, again, I could easily walk around it, I don't have to walk around it. I could kill it in my normal course of walking. What I don't know, Rabbi Osei, is can I actively go out to find snakes and scorpions to kill on Shabbos? They're not in my normal course of walking. They don't pose an active risk to me. But I see one. So I see over there, right? It doesn't mean, obviously, you know, you put on your fatigues, you know, and go out hunting snakes and scorpions. That's what it means. But again, let's say the mice, again, I see a snake or scorpion over there. It's not in my normal course of walking, and it's not posing a risk. Can I go out of my way to kill it on Shabbos? So that we don't know yet. Well, the Gemara ends off with a story. With this, we'll conclude. So listen to this. Abba bar Marta, to Abba bar Minyumi, have a maski bay debede shkalusa zuze. So we'll say what happened. Abba bar Marta, also known as Abba bar Minyumi, borrowed money from the house of the Reish Kalusa. He was supposed to pay up, but he did not pay up. So what did they do? Asyu ka mitzarule. So remember, the Reish Kalusa, sometimes, or I should say, the members of the Reish Kalusa's house were often known as a very rough bunch. So they brought in Arba Bar Marta and they were beating him up. They are beating him up because he had not repaid his debt. So what happened? Havashade Roka. So I say, as they were beating him up, this apparently, again, this was Shabbos. This was Shabbos. So what happened? Let's say, see like the people we're dealing with over here, not exactly like the people of highest, you know, moral caliber. They brought in, can you imagine the scene? This sounds like out of a mafia scene over here. Right? So Abba Bar Marta borrowed money from the Reish Kalusa. He couldn't pay up. They bring him in. They're beating him up on Shabbos. So what happened? The Reish Kalusa sees. So Havishade Roka. So they saw that there was some saliva on the ground. I don't know if it was Abba Bar Marta's saliva from beating him up or someone else's saliva. So Amar Reish Kalusa, Aisumana Sachifu Eluya. So Reish Kalusa said, listen, do me a favor. So apparently the Reish Kalusa was present for the beating. So the Reish Kalusa says, listen, there's some saliva over there. Bring a kli, put it on top of the saliva. I don't want to look at the saliva over Shabbos. So I want to say, isn't this incredible? So I want to point out that, remember, the Reish Kalusa said, because remember, the saliva is mukta, so you can't get rid of it. You also can't mash it into the ground, because that could be a problem of binyan, of leveling out the ground. So the Reish Kalusa says, bring a kli to go ahead and cover up the saliva. So we'll say, so you'll say to yourself, Reish Kalusa, you're beating up a Jew on Shabbos to get your money from your loan. And yet, again, you're makbid on the halachas of mukta. So you're not makbid the halachas of beating up Jews, but you're makbid on the halachas of mukta. So we'll say, what's the simple answer? We all live with inconsistencies. No one is perfect. And of course, we all have those areas of our life where there's like a shtickle dysfunction. But again, see, the beautiful part is life is not an all or nothing. So it's true. The Reish Kalusa beats up Jews to get his money back. But he's very makbid on mukta. So he takes some liberties with the Daraisos. But he's very makbid on the Dirabban. So we'll say, so again, it's an incredible insight into human nature. We all live with inconsistencies. I know that I'm fundamentally flawed in these areas. I'm derelict in these areas. But I'm makbid on these areas. And by the way, it's okay. Obviously, the goal is to fix the things that I'm derelict in. But lemais, again, we all live with inconsistencies. This is the way that it works. So Amar Lahu says this. Poor Abba Bar Marta is getting beaten up to get money. Right? So he says to him, Lo tzrichusa by the Reish Kalusa. Reish Kalusa, you don't have to get the kli. Am Rabbi Yehuda, rok darsa lefi tumo. Because Rabbi Yehuda said that if you have saliva, all you need to do is walk on it in the normal course of walking, and if it gets absorbed into the ground, that's totally fine. So the Reish Kalusa says, what do you see? Amr lehu, tsar mir rabbanon. I didn't know that Abba Bar Marta was a Talmud Chacham, shafkua, leave him alone. So I stopped beating him up. Stopped beating him up because he was a Talmud Chacham. So again, many things to learn from this story. Right? Number one, don't beat Jews up for money. That's number one, take home lesson. Number two, no one's perfect. We all live with inconsistencies. Also, we see this right, like this is ridiculous. You're beating up Jews for money, yet you're worried about saliva and kalim and muktzah. Let's say we all have elements of our personality like that. I'm makbid on this, right? This is something I'm so makbid on, yet I take so many liberties in this. So I want to point out that again, the fact that I take liberties in this area doesn't take away from the fact that I'm good in a different area. We all have strengths, we all have weaknesses. And your weaknesses do not erase your strengths. But your strengths also do not allow you to ignore your weaknesses. So that's what the story like this is. The Reish Galus has a strength. He's makbid on Hilchos Shabbos. He's just not the makbid in Hilchos beating up Jews for money. Okay, but Lamaisa, his hakpod in Hilchos Shabbos is not eroded by his lack of hakpodah in taking care of Jews. I would say, but again, we also see from here that halacha lamaisa, apparently as much as you can't go ahead and rub saliva into the ground on Shabbos, because it could be a violation of malacha of binyan, you can go ahead and halacha lamaisa, you can go ahead and walk on it, what we call the feet tumor, the normal course of walking. So too says the Gemara, when it comes ultimately again to the killing of snakes and scorpions, if you just walk over them in the normal course of walking and kill them, that is fine. What we're still left with is, can you go out of your way to kill them on Shabbos? And Mi'at Hashem to be continued tomorrow. Shkach HaBasi, we'll stop here. Hashem Kach to everyone. Have a wonderful, wonderful rest of the day.